Chapter 2. Developing the System of Control. Perhaps it's because Klaus Schwab released his first book, The Fourth Industrial Revolution, in 2016, with the expectation of a Hillary Clinton win of the presidency, but instead got Donald Trump, that Schwab didn't get the world to pay attention to the ideas in his book. Maybe that's why in 2018 he published his second book, Shaping the Future of the Fourth Industrial Revolution, which he was hoping might have a greater impact. It's like Margaret Mitchell publishing Gone with the Wind in 1936, not having it become a massive bestseller, then coming back a few years later with the sequel, Really Gone with the Wind. I imagine Schwab hanging out among all his rich friends in Davos, Switzerland, scratching his head and saying, "Why didn't Hillary win?" And I don't know a single person who voted for Donald Trump. Maybe like Hillary after 2008, when she got blown away by Barack Obama, Schwab said, "Well, let's give it another try." Maybe the problem was with Mark Benioff and his foreword, Schwab thinks. Yeah, Salesforce is a big company in San Francisco and all the Silicon Valley people know about it, but maybe I need a bigger name. Let me think. Oh, I got it. How about Microsoft? I'll get their CEO, Satya Nadella. That'll make people stand up and take notice. Bill Gates founded Microsoft, and everybody loves Bill Gates. However, Nadella doesn't do much better than Benioff. Nadella begins by worshiping at the altar of Schwab and the World Economic Forum with this cringeworthy opening. Through insightful convenings and publishing, the World Economic Forum and its founder, Klaus Schwab, have continued to cast a bright light on both the opportunities and the challenges of the Fourth Industrial Revolution. They are right to confront zero-sum thinking about the coming wave of new technologies by pointing out that their evolution is entirely within our power. If you're wondering much about Satya Nadella, the bottom of the first page of the foreword gives you a quick little information bite. Satya Nadella is CEO of Microsoft and author of Hit Refresh, The Quest to Rediscover Microsoft's Soul and Imagine a Better Future for Everyone. You ever wonder why all these business types often use religious language in their writing when they probably don't have much religion in the first place? Don't get me wrong, I'm all in favor of business leaders talking about business. I just think it's probably a good idea to stay in that lane. As I read these books, many of the so-called business leaders strike me as nothing more than overachieving high school students who want to show the principal how much better they understand the school than anybody else. Then, when the principal is sufficiently impressed, asks to be appointed to student council rather than go through the messy work of being elected by the student body. Here's a sample of this thinking from Nadella. "The confluence of data with massive computational storage and cognitive power will transform industry and society at every level, creating opportunities that were once unimaginable from health and education to agriculture, manufacturing, and services. My company and others are betting on the convergence of several important technology shifts: mixed reality, artificial intelligence, and quantum computing. With mixed reality, we are building the ultimate computing experience, one in which your field of view becomes a computing surface. Your digital world and your physical world become one. The data, apps, and even the colleagues and friends on your phone or tablet will be available anywhere you want to access them, while you're working in your office, visiting a customer, or collaborating with colleagues in a conference room." I don't mean to denigrate the technological achievements of companies like Microsoft. It's simply that I think they've overstated their value to the average person. Let's take the idea that your apps can go with you on your phone or laptop. That's great. Maybe I can go to a conference, get up an hour or two early, and do a little work on my laptop or check emails on my phone. However, I still probably need to hit the gym, take a shower, get some coffee, and get something to eat before the first speaker takes the stage at 9 a.m. Thanks to big tech, I can do a little more work in my day. But I don't think that calls for a reordering of society. I still have to get my ass down to the gym and pedal my 6 miles if I want to have the slightest bit of health benefit. And if by chance I'm staying in a nice hotel and the bike at the gym has a screen that shows a video of bicycling through the French countryside as I pump my legs, well, that's all nice and good. But just because I've seen a little of the French countryside while I'm sweating on the bike doesn't mean I have any increased appreciation or understanding of French culture. Like Schwab, Nadella wants to dazzle you with the technological changes because if you're a little intimidated, it makes you easier to control. You won't raise your hand to ask a question because you don't want to sound stupid. Maybe that's my superpower. I don't mind sounding stupid. And don't you always remember your teacher saying, there's no such thing as a stupid question? But when they can't answer my stupid questions, well, who's the stupid one? Here's Nadella, hoping you'll feel intimidated, and hand power over to Klaus Schwab and his Davos buddies. Similarly, industry and society must come together to focus on empowering both people and organizations by democratizing access to intelligence to help solve our most pressing challenges. For example, if AI is one of technology's top priorities, healthcare is surely one of AI's most urgent applications. Coupled with mixed reality, the cloud, and business optimization tools, AI will be central to healthcare transformation underway on the science bench, in the clinic, and throughout medical center operations. That paragraph certainly wasn't put together by somebody with the slightest bit of liberal arts training. It makes me wonder if they've ever read a book that held their attention. Okay, so Nadella writes, industry and society must come together for the purpose of, quote, democratizing intelligence. Why in God's name do industry and society have to come together for the purpose of democratizing intelligence, whatever the hell that means? Does some homeless person in Los Angeles hold one of the hidden keys to artificial intelligence? Is there some third grader in Wisconsin who, if we could just get her to accept the need to democratize intelligence, all would be good in the world? All right, I accept that good health care is a priority. What do we know about good health? Don't be overweight. Eat a healthy diet. Exercise. Have good social relationships. On that last point, good social relationships, I suggest you read what Malcolm Gladwell has written about their importance in a short essay titled The Rosetto Mystery. Here's the anomaly about this small Pennsylvania town first noticed by a man named Stuart Wolfe in the 1950s. Wolfe was a physician. He studied digestion and the stomach and taught in the medical school at the University of Oklahoma. He spent his summers on a farm in Pennsylvania, not far from Rosetto, although that, of course, didn't mean much, since Rosetto was so much in its own world, and it was possible to live in the next town and never know much about it. One of the times when we were up there for the summer, this would have been in the late 1950s, I was invited to give a talk at the local medical society, Wolfe said several years later in an interview. After the talk was over, one of the local doctors invited me to have a beer. And while we were having a drink, he said, you know, I've been practicing for 17 years. I get patients from all over, and I rarely find anyone from Rosetto under the age of 65 with heart disease. This was a shocking finding to Wolfe, as in the late 1950s, heart attacks were the leading cause of death for men under the age of 65. How could heart attacks be so rare in this small Pennsylvania town populated mainly by immigrants from a small town in southern Italy? The researchers looked at genetics, food, and exercise and could find no correlation. Then they started looking at the social structure of the town itself. What Wolfe began to realize was that the secret of Rosetto wasn't diet or exercise or genes or location. It had to be Rosetto itself. As Brune and Wolfe walked around the town, they figured out why. They looked at how Rosettans visited one another, stopping to chat in Italian on the street, say, or cooking for one another in their backyards. They learned about the extended family clans that underlay the town's social structure. They saw how many homes had three generations living under one roof and how much respect grandparents commanded. They went to Mass at Our Lady of Mount Carmel and saw the unifying and calming effects of the church. They counted 22 separate civic organizations in a town of just under 2,000 people. But Nadella doesn't want to talk about things like a good weight, healthy diet, exercise, and positive social relationships. Instead, he wants to talk about individual variability in genes, immunological systems, and lifestyle for each person. All those are worthy subjects of study, but why does that require us to reorder our society into some technocratic theocracy? And where is there any discussion about the quality of our social connections? How many people do we interact with in a positive way during a typical day? The world Schwab and Nadella want to create is devoid of these connections. As a result, might be the unhealthiest society ever devised by the mind of man. Finally, Nadella moves to the close, which is where he wants to disarm the people of their skepticism. Because if you trust them, you'll let them do things you wouldn't otherwise let them do. Finally, trust in today's digital world means everything. In every corner of this world, we need a revitalized regulatory environment that promotes innovative and confident use of technology. The biggest problem is antiquated laws that are ill-suited to deal with contemporary problems. The prescient topics explored in this book, coupled with the dialogue it sparks at World Economic Forum gatherings, are vital contributions to understanding and solutions. The potential benefits are unprecedented. And as this book concludes, public-private leadership are essential. Nadella is a smart man. He didn't get to his position at Microsoft by being an idiot. Maybe he got there by being a yes man, but certainly not because he wasn't smart. Like any good general, he understands the strengths and weaknesses of his own side as well as those of his enemy. Nadella understands that his side has these technological wonders created by his engineers. That is a great advantage. What Nadella realizes he lacks is support for a great restructuring of society. In order to implement his plans, he needs to get you to trust him. Think about trust in your own life. Many Catholics have been horrified in recent years to learn of the sexual abuse of children by trusted members of the clergy. In hindsight, the trust these parents placed in their clergy members is difficult to understand. However, these were supposed to be men and women of God who lived in fear of their eternal souls. It was difficult for many to reconcile this idea with the wickedness of some supposed people of God. Trust is not something we give people in the absence of a robust system of transparency and accountability. There have been too many examples in history when trust has been misplaced. Nadella wants to repeat the mistakes of the past when he writes, "The biggest problem is antiquated laws that are ill-suited to deal with contemporary problems." Could you imagine the government creating a new child care program where they told you that you couldn't observe the facilities or examine the credentials of the people running the facility? Parents would stage a revolt. But Nadella just wants you to trust him with these technological changes. Like Schwab, Nadella wants to close the deal with you, promising the enormous benefits while downplaying the risks. Because if they need to get your consent, they're not going to tell you about the club they've hidden behind their back if you protest. The hidden club is contained in the sentence, "The potential benefits are unprecedented, and as this book concludes, public-private leadership and partnership are essential." Here's the perspective I'm going to take about this sentence. Every time you hear the expression public-private or partnership, I want you to replace it with the word fascism. Because you see, fascism, as practiced in both Mussolini's Italy and Hitler's Germany, was a public-private partnership. This is how fascism differs from communism. The communists seized the means of production and tried to run these industries. They didn't do a good job. Mussolini and Hitler had a different idea. Government and big business were both powerful entities. A battle between these two groups would be unproductive as communists found out to their dismay. But instead of a fight, a cunning leader might understand that a deal could be made. Big business leaders don't like workers who agitate for better working conditions and higher pay. As a first step, Mussolini and Hitler broke the labor unions. Once the workers were disarmed, the leaders were free to attack other countries and do what they wanted with their own dissidents. Whenever you hear the word public-private, I want you to translate it in your mind as a promise that the government will not hesitate to attack the people if they protest against the plans of big business. In the preface to his second book, Schwab also begins by talking about trust. The cloaked language he uses makes one wish to have been a fly on the wall among the Davos elite when Trump was elected in 2016 and the years that followed. They must have been falling all over themselves, wondering whether Trump and his skepticism were the disease or simply a symptom of something much larger that threatened to undermine their plans. Public trust in business, government, the media, and even civil society has fallen to the point where more than half of the world feels the current system is failing them. The widening gap in trust between those in the country's top income quartile and the rest of the population indicates that social cohesion is fragile at best and very close to breaking down at worst. It is this precarious political and social context that we face both the opportunities and the challenges of a range of powerful emerging technologies, from artificial intelligence to biotechnologies, advanced materials to quantum computing, that will drive radical shifts in the way we live, and which I have described as compromising the fourth industrial revolution. In the middle of the first Trump term, Schwab and his Davos crew must have been nervous. According to Schwab, the bottom 75% of the country thinks the top 25% is screwing them. They understood that things were very close to falling apart, which is why he wrote, "Social cohesion is fragile at best." This isn't me talking. This was Klaus Schwab in 2018. But Schwab is nothing if not persistent. He was still pushing this fourth industrial revolution when he wrote, "We face both the opportunities and the challenges of a range of powerful emerging technologies." He's like that Catholic priest who says to the parents of his parish, "I know there's been a lot of accusations about priests being alone with kids, but I still want to take your young teenage boys away for a long ski weekend." Schwab freely admits that the elite of the world are not trusted by the vast majority of the population, but he's gonna keep going. But standing at these crossroads means we bear a huge responsibility. If we miss this window of opportunity to shape new technologies in ways that promote the common good, enhance human dignity, and protect the environment, there is a good chance that the challenges we experience today will only be exacerbated as narrow interests and biased systems further entrench inequalities and compromise the rights of people in every country. The audacity of Schwab is genuinely breathtaking. The Davos group members are the elite 1% of the world. If there has been a problem with income inequality, human dignity, or degradation of the environment, it's the fault of that 1%. It's a little like the main suspect in a murder being the detective of the crime. That might make for an interesting movie, but should always remain in the realm of fiction. Those who cause these problems should not be driving the solution. Schwab lets you know that his brain trust he relies on are the very people who created this mistrust among the population. This book is the product of many world-class experts from across the World Economic Forum's diverse community. Section 2, in particular, synthesizes the perspectives of leading thinkers from the Forum's Global Future Councils and expert network. Were it not for their generous contributions of time and knowledge, it would have been impossible to cover the breadth of subject matter to the depth required to make sense of the most impactful technology domains. I also very much appreciate the thoughtful and most relevant reflections provided by Satya Nadella in the foreword. These are people who don't live in your world. These are ivory tower intellectuals, bought and paid for by the corporate titans who are upset that they don't yet have complete control over your world. But they don't call it corruption. They call it partnership. While he sets out much of the same argument in the introduction as he does in the preface, Schwab tells you exactly what he hopes to bring about at the end of his introduction. The book closes with a vision for systems leadership, summarizing the critical governance issues that leaders from all sectors, along with the general public, must tackle together to create an inclusive, sustainable, and prosperous future. Schwab isn't inviting you to help him create a better future. He's inviting you to help him build your prison cell. In his second book, Schwab seemed to believe he had to simplify his original message so at the end of each chapter he provided a simple 1 to 2 page summary. The first question he seeks to answer is to define the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Here's how Schwab describes it in his chapter, Framing the Fourth Industrial Revolution. The Fourth Industrial Revolution is a way of describing a set of ongoing and impending transformations in the systems that surround us and which most of us take for granted every day. While it may not feel momentous to those of us experiencing a series of small but significant adjustments to life on a daily basis, it is not a minor change. The Fourth Industrial Revolution is a new chapter in human experience, on par with the first, second, and third industrial revolutions, and once again driven by the increasing availability and interaction of a set of extraordinary technologies. Confused? Schwab is telling you that the public doesn't see these momentous changes. Sure, the people notice the minor changes, but things are genuinely moving in a big way, according to Schwab. Once again, Schwab and his Davos group are just so much better at figuring out what's happening in your life than you. And Schwab doesn't want you depending on yourself to figure out these changes or any of the local or national institutions you've relied on for years. In a rhetorical sleight of hand that would have done the communists proud as they established their Young Pioneer program to indoctrinate the children, Schwab reveals his plan in a section titled A New Leadership Mindset. These three challenges, distributing benefits, managing externalities, and ensuring a human-centered future, cannot be easily solved top-down through regulation or well-meaning government initiatives. Nor is it at all likely that the current constellation of international and national institutions, market structures, organized and spontaneous social movements, and incentives for individuals will lead to powerful new technologies being widely available, completely free from harm, and fully focused on empowering the people that use them. This should strike everybody as a shot across the bow of any person who believes in a civil and peaceful society. Schwab has no interest in typical government programs. He doesn't believe in any currently existing international or national institutions. Neither does he believe in any spontaneous social movements or individuals who rise up with good ideas or any of the typical incentive programs that might bring about positive change. Schwab and his Davos gang are interested in wiping out every one of the previously existing social structures that have guided the development of countries and nations. I've always believed that if somebody confesses something disturbing about themselves, such as, I've never been able to be faithful, you should pay attention. If you choose to date that person and find your heart broken when they cheat on you, the blame should fall on you. Schwab makes it clear he intends to wipe away the power of all our institutions and structures. In the chapter summary, Schwab lays it out again. The Fourth Industrial Revolution is a new chapter in human development, driven by the increasing availability and interaction of a set of extraordinary technologies building on three previous technological revolutions. This revolution is only in its early stages, which provides humankind with the opportunity and responsibility to shape not just the design of new technologies, but also more agile forms of governance and positive values that will fundamentally change how we live, work, and relate to each other. What are these more agile forms of governance? A summary execution by firing squad without the benefit of a trial? Maybe the continued illegal detention of January 6, 2021 protesters, many of whom languish in jails more than a year after the event, who have been denied a speedy trial? And there really isn't much discussion of what these positive values are, except for the concern that the 75% of the country mentioned before doesn't seem to trust the top 25%. Are the members of the Davos group or Carl Schwab going to come to your house and ask, "Why don't you like me?" It's likely that Schwab's plan involves pledging your trust to the Davos group lest you suffer the punishments made possible by their more agile forms of governance. After all, how are they going to get you to accept these fundamental changes to how we live, work, and relate to each other? What will be done to those who object? Schwab is curiously silent on such subjects. For a long portion of his second book, Schwab spends a great deal of time talking about the interconnectedness of technology, as if we didn't realize that the technologies of the fourth industrial revolution are connected to one another in all that they require and build on the digital capabilities and networks created by the third industrial revolution, just as those technologies required and built on the electricity networks of the second industrial revolution. That's almost as self-evident as saying, before they could be your parents, your grandparents needed to have children. It is at such banalities that Schwab excels. In the next chapter, Schwab discusses the politics of technologies and what he calls the mistaken twin beliefs that technology drives history and that technology is value neutral. In fact, he labels both beliefs extremely dangerous. If you were looking for at least one area of life where politics didn't intrude, Schwab will give you no sanctuary. It's Schwab's belief that when any technology is created, it contains the residue of values, goals, and compromises. And the more powerful the technology, the more important it becomes to appreciate what these are. Perhaps he's right. Maybe if people understood that Mark Zuckerberg created Facebook as a way for his fellow Harvard males to rate the attractiveness of the Harvard females, we'd all resign from the platform, Zuckerberg would lose all of his money, and he would end up as a homeless person sleeping on the streets of San Francisco. I understand it's a long shot, but a person can dream. One must be wary of how Schwab and his Davos group use language. I think one of the most dangerous words that should concern you is stakeholder. This is how Schwab ends the chapter titled Empowering All Stakeholders. Creating a prosperous, inclusive, and equitable fourth industrial revolution for society and citizens means being conscious of the choices we make in technological systems which will inevitably impact economic, environmental, and social systems. This means having the courage to confront existing economic and political paradigms and reshaping them to empower individuals regardless of ethnicity, age, gender, or background. Our country was founded on the idea of individual rights. The government is supposed to protect those rights. That's called freedom. But if Schwab and company come up with a way to short-circuit those rights, that would be a powerful tool. This is the definition of stakeholder from Investopedia. A stakeholder is a party that has an interest in a company and can either affect or be affected by the business. The primary stakeholders in a typical corporation are its investors, employees, customers, and suppliers. However, with the increasing attention on corporate social responsibility, the concept has been extended to include communities, governments, and trade associations. Whenever you hear the word stakeholder, you should think of it as a weapon Schwab and company will use to deprive a person of their rights. Section 2 of Schwab's second book is titled Technologies, Opportunities, and Disruption, and contains a great deal of unrelated material, such as this gem. The rising importance and applicability of machine learning has created the demand for new types of customized computing architectures. Google, one of the world's largest purchasers of chips, designed large numbers of tensor processing units, application-specific integrated circuits designed for deep learning algorithms. One might be tempted to discount the importance of such a bland paragraph, except for how it slips in the idea of deep learning algorithms. Remember all those science fiction machines you saw as a kid where the robot went crazy, killing people, and the climax of the film was when the hero discovered it wasn't the robot that was at fault, but the psychologically deranged developer? Yeah, this is one of those kinds of problems. Except that instead of the robot going on a killing spree, the algorithm will simply declare your well-reasoned policy disagreement to be hate speech, or even worse, racist. Yes, the problem is not the machine. It's the person who programmed it. Which is why the radical leftists of Silicon Valley are so distrusted by the rest of America. The next section is titled The Internet of Things, and comes to the shocking conclusion that much of our world is interconnected. Another section, Cyber Risks, comes to the inspired realization that there are cyber risks involved in technology and we should spend money to defend against these risks. Final chapters on artificial intelligence, biotechnologies, drones, advanced materials, and virtual reality are similarly unenlightening. It's only when we get to the conclusion of Schwab's second book that he starts to reveal how he and his Davos group are going to restructure society. Don't worry, he tells you. We won't just have governments or corporations coming after you. There will be other sources of pressure. Governance, however, is not just government. The formal structures we have for creating laws and regulations. Governance includes the development and use of standards, the emergence of social norms that can constrain or endorse use, private incentive schemes, certification, and oversight by professional bodies, industry agreements, and the policies that organizations apply voluntarily or by contract in their relationship with competitors, suppliers, partners, and customers. In this world that Schwab wants to create, you'll have to worry about more than just government. In truth, it doesn't seem as if Schwab has much use for government unless it does exactly what he wants. Instead, Schwab is counting on the big corporations to function as de facto governments, possibly through their terms of service. Does it make sense how the big tech companies were able to censor conservative viewpoints in the run-up to the 2020 election? How did they do this when this violated the spirit of our First Amendment? How did these tech leaders justify it to their conscience? Possibly because they've been brainwashed by Klaus Schwab at all those Davos conferences? And did you notice how Schwab pushes the emergence of social norms, probably by the use of his beloved conversations, which are nothing more than scripts developed by Schwab's chosen actors, as if we were watching a Broadway play? But with Schwab's scripts, the fiction becomes reality. If you're wondering how these new standards are going to be developed, don't worry. They'll be developed by the experts. Communities of professionals are essential for establishing the right standards, especially standards that reflect a consensus of values and stakeholder priorities. The IEEE, for example, draws on 423,000 members to build consensus among organizations and deliver safety, reliability, and interoperability in a range of electrical and digital systems. Their guidelines for AI show that they are thinking through the broad impact of technologies and not just focusing on the technical requirements or compliance. Is it becoming clear there's never going to be an actual vote? Instead, there's going to be a managed discussion with the predetermined outcome amenable to that of Schwab and his Davos friends. In his advice for governments, Schwab tells governments they must adopt, quote, agile governance, which he defines as an essential strategy to adapt how policies are generated, deliberated, enacted, and enforced to create better governance outcomes in the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Inspired by the Agile Manifesto and a report by the World Economic Forum Global Agenda Council on the future of software and society, the concept of agile governance seeks to match the nimbleness, fluidity, flexibility, and adaptiveness of the technologies themselves and the private sector actors adopting them. Just in case you wonder what all that means, it means that Schwab wants to act with all of the ethics of our largest corporations who have polluted our air and water, the pharmaceutical companies who clamor for complete financial immunity for their vaccines, and the big tech who never seem to suffer for violating American values of free speech and free competition. Schwab goes on to detail what some of these models might look like when he writes, encouraging collaborations between governments and businesses to create developatory sandboxes and experimental test beds to develop regulations using iterative, cross-sectoral, and flexible approaches as discussed by Jeff Mulligan. Promoting the development of ecosystems of private regulators competing in markets to deliver governance in line with overarching social goals as proposed by Gillian Hadfield in Rules for a Flat World. These proposals are a blueprint for disaster. If liberals of the 1970s were terrified of the power of the intelligence agencies, the defense industry, and big business, those concerns were nothing compared to the corporate-based power world envisioned by Schwab. I'm not sure any filmmaker or writer has adequately captured the dystopian elements of this planned future. The closest comparison I can make is to the Alien movies, in which a corporation partners with the government to bring a monster back to Earth to study its unique biology. This is a genuinely lawless future in which the only justice meted out is that given by powerful corporations. Let's understand the magic show with which Schwab hopes to dazzle the public. He goes into minute and exquisite detail about all the advances in technology and summarizes many of the questions raised by these new technologies. At the same time, we're supposed to be dazzled by these advances. He tells us there are dark undercurrents, which these technologies have not addressed. Next, Schwab wants us to believe his rich friends have had nothing to do with the bad parts of our development, and in any case, there will be disruptions and new ways of doing things that will forever erase all of these problems. However, to get to that bright future, we're going to have to make some changes, take off the guardrails, so to speak, loosen up some of the laws. But don't worry, he'll get some private regulators out there. Discipline will be meted out by trade and professional organizations that won't let you pursue a living if you don't do what they want. And if at the end you still stand up and complain, well, he'll just get big tech to silence you. Where did all these ideas come from? We will investigate that in our next chapter.